Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Hey. Not in a Creepy Way.
Hello, this is brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight, brother Eric has the episode off. So brother Drew and I will be discussing the... What year is this? 2007.
Yeah.
Mr. Brooks, starring Kevin Costner and Demi Moore and William Hurt, with a few appearances perhaps from Dane Cook, Mark Hellenberger, and some others. So, I have never seen this movie before last night. So, I'm assuming this was on your list, Brother Drew?
Yeah. Don't get offended, but when I saw this movie a long time ago, one of the first things I thought was, this is a movie Jason needs to see.
I'm not offended. What drove you to think that?
Well, it's a thriller. It's kind of twisty. This is a crazy movie. It's yes. Got really good performances. I love everything that William Hurt does in this movie. He doesn't have a huge role, but it reminds me a lot of his appearance in A History of Violence. I don't know if you've seen that movie.
I don't believe I have.
He's not in that movie very much either, but he's awesome. It makes me appreciate how good William Hurt is. I don't know if you're a Kevin Costner guy or not, but... I thought he was really good in this movie, too. They are better than this movie is.
Yes.
And but I really enjoyed their performances. I kind of dig the vibe of this movie, even though it's like there's too much going on. There's like five movies all shoved into one. I don't know. I think it's really watchable.
Yeah, I'm actually interested to rewatch it down the road at some point so I can see the things that I've missed, because I'm sure I miss things. But having watched it for the first time last night, I was actually by myself last night because boyfriend Jesse's unfortunately under the weather. So I was alone in my living room watching it with the lights down, watching this, and it was a little creepy in parts. And I was grateful that I was not able to guess most of the movie. There was a couple spots where I could see what was coming, but I think the movie very deliberately kind of tries to lead you so that it can misdirect you. Not in a bad way, just that's just kind of how it appears to be written.
Yeah, I mean, the movie acts like it's smarter than it is. If you think too hard, there's a lot that just doesn't really make much sense.
Yeah, they're big plot holes.
Yeah, and Mr. Brooks himself, he's sort of like the serial killer version of Batman. He can kind of do anything.
True.
But, you know, I mean, that's fine. This was just, I thought, kind of a trashy, pulpy, fun movie, and I was really interested to get your take on it.
Yeah, so how was your introduction to this movie?
I saw it when it first came out on video. I want to say it was reviewed on whatever iteration of At the Movies was going on at that time. And it had Kevin Costner and William Hurt, and it was about the main protagonist was a serial killer, so kind of sounded right up my alley. So I checked it out, and the dynamic between Costner and Hurt, I thought was so enjoyable that it made me forgive so much else going on in this movie.
It definitely has a good power to distract you, because the gravity of them playing off of each other, because there are parts of this where, to get into a little bit of the plot, Kevin Costner plays Earl Brooks, who is a successful box maker manufacturer, in Portland, Oregon. Although he also apparently dabbles in pottery and glasswork of some form, but he has a giant kiln in his shop. But so Kevin Costner is Earl Brooks, and William Hurt is Marshall. Marshall is kind of the internal alter ego of Earl. So they're kind of like the good versus evil, kind of, because Earl's not exactly good. No. I think Earl's mostly he's kind of bad, and then Marshall is just totally bad and just spurns him, just encourages him to act out in a way that they both seemingly enjoy. The thing that I enjoyed watching this was that there were moments where they built some great tension between the two of them and had to be resolved basically inside their head, which is shared. And sometimes they fought and it didn't work out. And other times they got along so well, they were laughing at the same jokes.
Yeah, there are at least two times in the movie where they both burst out into laughter at the same time. And it was such a creepy, wonderful effect.
Well, and it was so well acted that if you watch those, at least what I observed was that their mannerisms and posture were nearly identical.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if they practiced that a lot or if it just came naturally because they were trying to kind of model one another. But that was what creeped me out. It's like they could have been, you know, just duplicate images of one another.
Yeah. Marshall is sort of the devil on his shoulder, and he has no angel.
Right. Yeah. Earl is kind of already devilish, and Marshall just draws him even further out. So Brooks is a secret life as a serial killer, known as the Thumbprint Killer. He's been working hard to avoid killing by going to a support group. And so pretending to be an addict, I guess he's not pretending to be an addict. He says he's an addict. He just doesn't reveal that his addiction is murdering people.
Yeah. This movie knows it's funny, right?
I would hope so.
It plays it straight, but it's really funny.
It's got some hilarious parts. And then, so that's the question. Were the hilarious parts hilarious to be hilarious? Or were the hilarious parts hilarious ironically?
I am willing to give it the benefit of the doubt and say that they knew they were being funny.
So, as the plot, Marshall keeps encouraging Earl to act out. And in the opening couple scenes of this movie, Kevin Costner, Earl, you know, has an award. He and the wife are leaving the award. They go have ice cream dessert, and he's watching a couple that he'd been stalking for a while. Goes home, decides he's going to go to his workshop, tells his wife. Goes to the workshop, gets all his gear, gets everything ready, very meticulous, and then goes and murders these people in their house.
And he's really good at it.
He is very polished. It's something he's clearly done a lot. Also, he's very deliberate. He's done lots of research and has lots of tools because he's able to sneak past security systems, get past locked doors, and remove the security chain from a door, which was that creeped me out worse.
Yes, that is very creepy.
That's like, ooh, that just the whole scene of that tool coming around the door gave me chills. So,
And he had the weird habit of when he relocked the chain, he would only put it halfway. I don't know what that was about, but he did that a couple different times in the movie.
I don't know, maybe because it doesn't make noise. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know. You can't open the door as far?
Maybe, but if you're... I don't know. I mean, why would it matter? Because he's got a gun. He's going to shoot people. Kill them.
Yeah.
And he has good aim. He shoots and kills them efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
He dispatches their lives with quick aplomb. So, not realizing, though, however, oops, that the windows were open and... He's paranoid perhaps someone saw him. So after the murder, he heads home, but not before we get to see that he's taken tons of pictures of the murderer after having posed the bodies, which then he takes the pictures and throws them in his kiln and gets rid of all the evidence, even though, you know, he wants to keep them. Marshall reminds him that's against the rules. Fast forward a little bit, and it turns out there's some other things going on in the Brooks family. The daughter shows up after leaving college. And meanwhile, in the waiting room of the office of Mr. Brooks, Dane Cook is waiting for him, who is known as Mr. Smith.
This is a great movie if you hate Dane Cook.
Yeah, I wrote down a quote. I'll spoil it now because it's great. When we get to the point, if you watch this movie, and you should, I think you should watch this movie. I would tell everybody watch this movie you haven't seen because it's actually worth a watch. It's a good 2 hours of your time. I wrote, I have never wanted to be a shovel so much in my entire life before this movie.
Yeah, I mean, and there's at one point in the movie where Marshall says something like, even if he were funny, I still wouldn't like him.
I wrote it down. Even if that guy was charming and funny, I still wouldn't like him.
Yeah. So they knew what they were doing with Dane Cook.
Yeah. And he was skeezy, and he's good at skeezy, but I think that's not a stretch for him, probably.
Yeah. I mean, he was... Mr. Smith, the character he played, was so unlikable. It was great.
Yeah, I was hoping he was going to get killed.
I was
not disappointed.
There's no way he was not going to get killed. There's no way.
So after the murder of the couple, the police are investigating, and one of the main detectives is Demi Moore.
It's a weird role for Demi Moore.
She's playing Detective Tracy Atwood, and Tracy has some problems in life. She's been married a couple times. She's on her second pending divorce. Her husband, who is divorcing her, is an asshole and hanging on for more money because apparently she's stinking filthy rich. So he's holding out for more money and refuses to give up. In the meantime, he's making her life hell because she can't really investigate. She's being distracted at work. And one of her big busts, who apparently is some kind of weird killer, is on the loose. So there's a lot of just bananas moving parts in this movie.
Yeah, so there's a version of this movie where it's just Mr. Brooks dealing with Mr. Smith. There's a version of this movie where Mr. Brooks is grappling with his worry that he has passed on his addiction to his daughter. Yes. That could be its own movie. There's a version of the movie where it's just a cat and mouse game between Mr. Brooks and Detective Atwood. You know, sort of like a Heat version of this movie. There's a version of this movie where it's just about Detective Atwood and Mr. Brooks might be like her Hannibal Lecter while she's trying to catch this other serial killer. There's so much going on in this movie. It's too much for it to be like a really like good A quality movie because it makes it kind of a mess.
But yeah, it's going too many directions at the same time, and so my problem with it is I felt there was a lot of story that was trying to be built, but then not a lot of it was paid off. They paid off little pieces of it, but not enough that was satisfying. Because there's a subplot about his daughter comes home, turns out Jane is pregnant, and he doesn't really want her to have it, but then he says, no, I want you to have it, as some kind of reverse psychology.
Did you believe she was actually pregnant?
It never occurred to me that she wasn't. But now that you say that, no. But then there's just a subplot. Turns out that some shady things went on at school. Somebody was murdered. Suspicion is that she did it. And Earl knows she did do it. He's convinced she did. So then Earl improbably has all these alternate identities set aside in his secret stash and disguises. He's apparently also a master of disguise. He's like James Bond. He's like a master of disguise. Gets a plane ticket, flies to her school, kills another person in copycat fashion, and then returns home to alibi his daughter so she can be cleared of the charges.
Yes, he's a master of disguise. He's an expert murderer. He is a proficient hacker.
Yeah.
And he makes some boss pottery, too.
And apparently good boxes.
Yeah.
Enough that another company wants to buy him.
And this movie is supposed to take place in Portland?
Yes.
Did it look like Portland?
No. No. And I was actually looking for landmarks to see if they even remotely used Portland. They could have possibly obliquely used a bridge shot, maybe. But otherwise, none of the buildings were right. None of the streets were right. There were monuments that were actually from Louisiana in it.
Oh, nice.
Because I looked up one of the historical markers. I was like, I don't know. What is that sign? Because I could read the marker of the whatever it was. And I went and looked it up and I'm like, oh, that's in Louisiana. So I guess maybe that's where the movie was filmed. I don't know.
Well, why set it in Portland? It was a weird choice.
I think because it made it accessible to California easily, perhaps.
Maybe.
And maybe because it's a crazy town where there would be apartments and residential houses and people having sex with their curtains open. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe because they're having somebody who's an artiste with a kiln in their shop isn't out of the ordinary. I don't know. Having a police force where you'd have some crazy rich girl... rich woman work. I don't know. There's all these things. There's so many moving parts that you just kind of starts to sound improbable. Now, the more I talk about it, the more I'm like, yeah, this is a nuts movie.
It is. It's completely bonkers.
So there is, yeah, there's cat and mouse between Detective Atwood trying to figure out who the fingerprint, thumbprint killer, trying to figure out the thumbprint killer, and Earl and Marshall are kind of intrigued, although Earl's way more intrigued. He much admires Detective Atwood because she's doing it in spite of the fact that she doesn't have to work. She has money. And that really, and he wants to know more. So in some ways, it is, you're right, it is kind of that Silence of the Lambs-ish Clarice Hannibal kind of dynamic, except Earl has the kind of the drive.
Yeah, I think that's what Earl wants, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Earl wants to get caught. Earl wants it to end. Earl wants to die.
Yep.
Except he doesn't. And Marshall kind of pushes him around and convinces him he doesn't, but doesn't do a very convincing job. But then as it turns out, Earl really does want to live because he's going to have a grandbaby. So... There are some dynamics there. But Detective Atwood, in the meantime, ends up in an encounter with the crazy guy that's trying to kill her. She gets hurt. And, of course, then her partner is helping her out, helping her investigate some leads where they come in contact with Mr. Smith. Because she's convinced Mr. Smith has all the answers for her. He's just holding out. He just seems like that kind of asshole.
Because so, he is.
He is. And she confronts him and he denies it. And so she's like, whatever, we'll go on. And then they have the crazy scene where she goes to the house of the chiropractor doctor who was feeding steroids to her nemesis. And have that strange kind of seven-ish guy with the chair and the syringes from the ceiling.
This movie is so crazy.
So I don't know why that reminded me of Seven, but that's what I thought.
No, that was completely the vibe, because it was a bit of a jump scare. It was this weird like set up by a serial killer to mess with the cops who were tracking him in a very Rube Goldbergian way.
Yeah,
this is ridiculous.
And it's like she didn't shoot anybody. I mean, she shot something, but we're not sure what.
Mm-hmm.
And to no avail, Tracy still doesn't get the guy. And so they're going on, and then it turns out Mr. Smith is getting really impatient with Mr. Brooks, because Earl keeps postponing the guy that they want to kill, the guy that Mr. Smith has kind of picked out. But then Earl says, no, I don't like this guy. We're going to find, I got something better. I got something in the back. Hang on. We'll find something. And it turns out Earl is trying to get some twisted plot to kind of kill two birds with one stone, as it turns out.
Earl is just setting up all these dominoes.
And he's seemingly really good at it. So he's good at the long game. And Marshall is enjoying it a little bit, but he's also not really thrilled because he thinks Earl's kind of taking chances.
Yeah, Marshall just wants to keep killing in as expeditious and efficient manner as possible while staying safe so they can keep doing it.
And then they finally decide, Earl finally sets it up and says, yep, here's who we're going to go kill. Here we're going to go. We're going to go do this. So Mr. Smith and Earl sneak into the apartment of Tracy's soon-to-be divorced husband and one of the attorneys for the divorced husband.
Just a whole nother subplot we haven't even mentioned.
Right. So turns out the attorney for the husband is boying the husband and wants to drive up the price of the money so they can do something together with the money. At which point, in the background of hiding, Mr. Smith wets his pants, which was strangely satisfying.
It seemed right.
Yeah, it seems appropriate. And then Mr. Brooks dispatches both of them in quick fashion again, as he's very elegant at doing.
And he's doing this as a favor to Atwood, to frame Atwood. He's going to frame Smith.
I think both. Yeah. I think all of the above. I think he thinks he's doing Tracy Atwood a favor, but also he's casting misdirection by putting her under suspicion so that he has time to then be free enough to, in the next set of scenes, we see Mr. Smith has now got a gun on Earl as they're driving, and Earl is explaining to Mr. Smith all of the reasons why he shouldn't do that while they're driving, because, you know, hey, we're all going to die then. But I want you to kill me because I want to die, so why don't you shoot me over this open grave and then throw me in and throw the dirt down and nobody will know? Because that seems, you know, it's really well planned out. And so Mr. Smith and Earl end up at a cemetery that apparently Mr. Brooks owns, because water utilities and cemeteries are two things that are always in demand.
It's true.
So he opens the gate, because, of course, he has a key to the lock. He and Mr. Smith end up in the cemetery. And
Mr. Smith is super dumb.
Yes.
The whole time. He's super dumb.
Not a stretch. So, as it turns out, Mr. Brooks, Earl, had figured that this was what was going to happen and took it upon himself to sabotage Mr. Smith's gun so he couldn't kill Mr. Brooks. At which point is my favorite point of the whole movie. And Mr. Brooks basically attacks Mr. Smith with a shovel, which at the apex of the attack, he slices his neck open and kills him. just really deeply satisfying.
It is. It's immensely satisfying, that scene in the movie.
Yeah, he needed killing. So he then puts Mr. Smith in the ground. Seemingly everything's all locked up now. And as it turns out, then Tracy, who has been misdirected and has now basically assaulted her partner to get away because she's under suspicion now of murdering her ex-husband, soon to be ex-husband, and attorney. But the address that she was given, where Mr. Smith might be, happens to be the apartment of the crazy dude. And then there's this crazy gunfight.
Very, very stylized direction.
Yeah, with the strobe lights and mm-hmm. the explosions, and it was almost Twin Peaksy, I think. So there's a big shootout, and then there's like a murder suicide of the dude and his girlfriend, and Tracy's unhurt for the most part.
Yeah, and somehow still employed after all this.
Indeed. And then Mr. Brooks returns home, seemingly fine. And then this is the part of the movie where I was confused and wondering if part of this was truly the end of the movie and audiences didn't like it. And so
exactly what I thought. I thought that that seemed like the end of the movie. And it must have tested so poorly that they shot a Newhart style wraparound ending.
That's what it felt like to me.
Yeah, that's funny, 'cause that's exactly what I thought.
So spoilers, don't listen. Go watch the movie, then come back. Are you back? Okay. So yeah, the point where she stabs him with the scissors and he bleeds out. And then she puts the glasses on. That, to me, would have been the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I actually would have been okay with that. That would have been a fine ending. To me, I think. Because that was very final. I mean, there was no ambiguity.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been interesting for him to die at the end. But what she did made no sense. Like, there was no setup for it.
No. Except that maybe she knew that he knew she was a killer and was afraid he was going to turn her in.
Yeah. Yeah. But she was off the hook.
Well, she thinks she's off the hook, but maybe she isn't.
Yeah.
Because ostensibly, she doesn't know that Dad bailed her out and fixed it. She just knows that she has an alibi for something, and the police don't think she did it, but she knows she did it. So, yeah. So, to me, yeah, I agree. To me, that seems like an ending that nobody liked, and so they just said, ooh.
Yeah, they kind of chickened out of it.
They went the American ending route, where then the movie closes with him praying.
I do love the fact that his solution to try and quit killing people is to go to an AA meeting.
I mean, he means well. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's kind of on the right track-ish, I guess, in a little way. It's a little Fight Club-y.
Yes, you know. the dynamic between him and Marshall, for sure.
Yeah. So it was interesting to watch that relationship, and it also makes me wonder if Marshall, and this is really getting into the minutia of the movie, but if he and Marshall grew up together, if he had Marshall as a kid, or if Marshall was always an adult.
That would be super creepy when he's a kid and he's just got Marshall talking to him all day.
Right.
I actually really love the fact that they never address it.
Yeah. Like,
they never explain it. They never address it. You just learn through context that no one else sees him, that when he's talking to Marshall, no one else hears him. I thought that part was really well done.
Yeah, because I just assume that when he's talking to Marshall, even though we hear it, it's all in his head.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why nobody else hears it. So,
and it's so fun that then there's two of them making fun of Mr. Smith, Dane Cook, right to his face, talking about what a baby he is,
which is hilarious. And Marshall also seems to find a new admiration for Earl, because when Earl really gets the twist going, Marshall's impressed. He's like, wow, you really pulled it off. Except now he's going to kill you.
Yeah, William Hurt is so good because he's so pouty and petulant when they're not killing people. And then he looks just so full of like joy and contentment when they are killing.
He's smug. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's got that smug self-satisfaction.
Yeah, I would watch another movie with Kevin Costner and William Hurt doing the exact same thing.
Yeah, I would like to see the sequel to this.
Yeah, maybe a slimmed down version of this movie.
Maybe a more cohesive single storyline, some more self-contained story.
Yeah.
I don't need any backstory though. I don't need any of the history.
No.
I don't need any of that. It's unnecessary. And I'm grateful that this movie didn't feel obligated to shove it in somewhere. Like to just shoehorn in a bunch of bullshit history that really don't matter in the scheme of this.
Yeah, it's sort of like the Joker. Like it works better if you don't know why or what happened, where they come from.
It would add nothing to the story at all. Mm-hmm. But, and then at the end of the movie, the final end, Earl has to know what really is Tracy's motivation. So he calls her on the phone, on a cell phone that he's pilfered from another random person. And they have an odd kind of phone conversation about, you know, why do you do it? And then Tracy realizes who he is.
Well, she knows he's not Mr. Smith.
Yeah. But she doesn't want to jeopardize her bust, so she doesn't blow the lid off of that. Seemingly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, who knows? The movie ends there, and that's fine. It was a lot already.
Yeah. So, the movie budgeted at an estimated $20 million, initial gross $28 million, so $50 million worldwide.
Yeah, this to me is like a perfect video hit or cable hit. I can see why it didn't do great at the theaters. I mean, this is a really difficult movie to explain.
Well, and it's a little. It's not fast enough to be an action movie, so it is kind of a suspense thriller, but there's not a lot of action. So, I mean, when there is action, it is all action. Mm-hmm. But the rest of it's just kind of, you know, it's just kind of a kind of a murder mystery, back burner murder mystery kind of movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's part twisty thriller, it's part cops and robbers, it's part psychological drama, and I think it's to its credit that this movie is so all over the place tonally, and there's just so much plot all shoved together, but the end product I think is still really enjoyable. I hadn't seen this movie in many years, and I had fond memories of it, and I enjoyed watching it again. I think it almost all has to do with the dynamic between William Hurt and Kevin Costner.
So interesting note I've stumbled upon. Wikipedia, sometimes right. On the director's commentary, Bruce Evans said that the film was to be the first of a trilogy. But as with any franchise, it depended on the film's profits. Despite its commercial success, there are no plans to make further films. Speaking in April 2009, Pennebaker said, quote, "Everybody wanted to make a trilogy. I saw Kevin last summer, and we still would love to. The idea of my character and Kevin's character, it'd be so much fun. I think you got to see how manipulative they both are with each other, and I would love to have done that, done the other three. So that explains a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a good movie there where Earl and Marshall are wrestling with whether or not they created in their daughter another serial killer.
Yeah. Well, and did they create it or was it just there? And because we don't know the history of Earl and Marshall, we don't know if it was just in them or if it was created.
Right. Well, Earl is certainly worried that as a father, he passed it on to his daughter. And at this point in my life, that's something I can entirely relate to. It's always your darkest fear is that you pass on all of your flaws and none of the things that you're actually proud of.
You extend your crazy just by reality.
Exactly.
Well, and Marshall does nothing to dissuade Earl of his worries.
Yeah, his reaction is pretty much like, yeah, so what?
Yeah, he prefers Earl in a position where Earl's a little paranoid and downtrodden because it's easier to manipulate him.
Yeah, he's more vulnerable to falling back into old habits.
But I definitely felt Kevin Costner was adequately creepy.
Yes. Yeah.
He had that affect where, you know, he would take his glasses off, but put his glasses back on. And he would have those long distant stares down the camera. Ugh, it just gives me chills. So.
I just realized this is your second Kevin Costner movie in a row, huh?
Is it?
Didn't you do JFK last week?
We did.
Do you see any Mr. Brooks in his JFK performance?
Yeah, they're very different. They're very different. Magic bullets, though. I don't dislike Kevin Costner. I like him in some movies. I dislike him in other movies. Robin Hood, for instance, was total shit.
Was that his fault?
Yeah. Because he chose not to have a British accent while everybody else around him did.
Did Christian Slater have a British accent?
I don't remember. But his delivery was stilted and stuttered and just, it was so clunky in Robin Hood. But I liked him very much in Dances with Wolves. Bull Durham, he was very good. Field of Dreams. So there's lots of Kevin Costner movies I like.
Silverado.
So I have no aversion to Kevin Costner per se. So, but yeah, JFK was a very different movie. Although this movie was surprisingly long. It was 2 hours on the button.
That's funny. It didn't feel that long.
It didn't. I'm glad it had enough time. Had it been much shorter, it would have been interesting to see what they had deleted. They would have had to delete one of the subplot movie lines.
Yeah, there's so much crap in this movie. It's either 2 hours or it's like 75 minutes.
Yeah, it would have been like a TV movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the soundtrack was strange. It was a strange soundtrack. It had some very strange music.
There were strange choices all over this movie.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But anything else on the plot that you'd like to discuss?
No, I just want to reiterate. I think Kevin Costner is really good in these kind of like twisty thriller movies. Reminds me of, did you ever see a movie called No Way Out?
Yes, Kevin Costner and Sean Young and Gene Hackman?
That sounds right, yeah. And that was another kind of twisty thriller movie that I thought was really good.
Yeah. Have you seen it lately?
No.
Yeah, it's a little rough on rewatch.
Is it? Well, anything with Sean Young doesn't really hold up, right?
That may be true. Yeah, that may be true. It wasn't bad. It wasn't a bad movie on rewatch. It just wasn't. I remember watching No Way Out and just being mesmerized and being. It was such a thriller that it really was suspenseful for me. Mm-hmm. But on rewatch, it had none of that. Because I just, it was so formulaic in the end that as soon as I started rewatching it, I already went all the way to the end.
No, that's too bad. I just remember the thing with them spending, like, I don't know how long it took them to just render a photograph.
Well, yeah. And they were using tape drives, giant DAT tape drives, right? Reel to reels. Mm-hmm. Old school mainframe tapes. Oh, I don't miss those days. So, in recap, I would give this movie, if I was grading it and judging it thusly, which is my want, I would probably give this movie a B+. This is it's worth your time. It's definitely worth the watch. I think it's going to be worth a rewatch, but I'll know more in a couple months. But definitely, if you haven't seen it and you like thrillers and you can kind of get past the crazy omnidirectional plot points, then you'll be fine with this. It's worth it, if nothing else, just to see Kevin Costner and William Hurt really kind of enjoying each other.
Yeah, I agree completely. This movie is bananas. It feels like they knew they weren't going to get a trilogy, so they threw everything into this first movie. And it's probably not the case, but it certainly felt like it at times. But William Hurt and Kevin Costner are so great in this movie. But yeah, Mr. Brooks, it was fun. I would definitely recommend it. It's worth your time, but this is one of those movies that the recommendation always comes with a caveat. Like, it's not a typically good movie, but it is very enjoyable. It's a good watch.
It's a great B movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think what you were describing is that they had seeded so much in this movie in the anticipation of a trilogy. I think that's why there was so many directions unfulfilled.
Yeah, it doesn't feel that deliberate. It definitely feels more scattered than that, but it didn't take away from how much I enjoyed the movie.
They might have tied it together. Who's to say?
Maybe.
This movie stands up as far as age-wise. It didn't feel dated to me at all.
Yeah.
It was actually pretty well shot. I thought it was it was a pretty movie.
Yeah. Did you look at what else this director has done?
No.
It's not much. Like, the pedigree behind this movie is really weird. The director, he's written a few movies.
Bruce A. Evans.
He wrote, the only other movie he directed was one that he wrote and directed, Cuffs, with Christian Slater.
Producer and screenwriter best known for his work on Stand By Me.
He also wrote Starman, which was a Jeff Bridges movie that I, for some reason, I watched a ton.
A lot. Yeah, I remember.
We had it on video, and that was one of those movies that was always on in the early days of the satellite dish movie channels.
Also true.
But yeah, it's the people who made this movie have not made a ton of movies. It's really weird.
He wrote Jungle to Jungle, a remake of a 1994 French film. I will not attempt to name the French film, so... Dear listener, if you wish to find out, then you can check out Bruce Evans on Wikipedia. My French is not strong enough to even remotely pronounce that. So, any housekeeping this week?
Not a whole lot. You got the note that I sold the car.
Yay!
That went super fast.
Excellent. Are you sad?
I was pretty sad, actually. I was that was a bummer to see that one go.
A lot of memories.
Yeah, but it went so fast it made me think I priced it too low, but that was fine.
Well,
better going fast than going too slow.
Yeah. Well, also, if you sold it and somebody thinks it got a really good deal, they're never going to come back to complain.
Yeah, that is true.
So who did you sell it to? A younger couple, older couple, single person?
An older couple at a Homer.
Okay.
They wanted, they're tired of spending a ton of money on their giant pickup truck as far as gas goes. So they just wanted something a little smaller to drive around on a day-to-day basis.
Are they going to achieve a lot more fuel economy?
Some. And it's premium fuel too, so.
Yeah, there's that.
Yeah.
Well, good on them.
But, I don't know, it was a good car. I think they'll enjoy it.
Yeah. It's weird. It's weird when you sell a car. Probably weirder in Alaska because it's a smaller market, so you might actually see your car again.
Yeah. Yeah. I still think I see the 85 Prelude every once in a while.
Oh, man. Yeah, when I sold my Escape here in Portland for a while there, I kept seeing it. And I knew it was mine because it had this one very distinctive scratch on the top side fender where the hood was. And it was a very distinctive. And it was that way when I bought the car. I bought it used, so. I would always see it, and it, clearly they put different plates on it, but it was mine. So it was funny to see, because the little old lady who was driving it was very, very different than me, clearly.
That's good. No one will get confused.
Not this lifetime, anyway.
Did you check out the... the Salt / Atomic Blonde episode?
Not yet, because I haven't watched them. So I'm hoping to this weekend, because I have Friday off. So I've got a 4-day weekend ostensibly. And we're going to Jerry's house tomorrow for Thanksgiving. So I'm not cooking.
Oh, nice.
For the first time in, I mean, I didn't cook last year because it was my birthday, but I'm not cooking on purpose this year because we're going to somebody else's for dinner, which it's always weird for me to be at somebody else's house when they're cooking, because it just doesn't feel like Thanksgiving to me, because I've cooked basically every year I've been in Portland except for, I think, 2 or 3, so.
Well, at least you get to relax this year.
Yeah. Well, I relaxed last year. Last year, my birthday was on Thanksgiving. We went out to Ruth's Chris Steakhouse, so, which was excellent. It was a wise choice. So this year, we're going to Jerry's house. So her mom's going to be there. Her younger brother I'm in the process of making a pie, so I'll bring a pie tomorrow. But not tomorrow, Thursday. I don't know what day it is. I'm so messed up.
Yeah, it was a little jarring to my family when I told them that we were podcasting tonight.
So Thanksgiving will be fun. Are you guys hosting this year?
We are. It's just going to be mom and dad and then Jennifer's parents. excuse me, Eric and Kelly are going out to, I think, Kelly's parents for Thanksgiving.
Oh. And then, are you getting up early to go Black Friday shopping?
No. I will not be leaving my house.
We will likely go, we go out, but not really to shop as much as gawk. So.
Yeah, no, it's terrible. not going anywhere. Jennifer might. I won't. I'll hang out with the kids.
It's fun and interesting. It's an experience. I mean, if you haven't been, it's definitely an experience. But Christmas approaches very quickly. Luckily, I'm done. So that's a good news. I ended up buying the girls a very fun present. They all got the same thing like last year.
Nice.
They're all getting the same thing, just different colors. Although I think two of them are the same color because Journey wants blue and one of your children also wanted blue, so.
That's fun. We went to Journey's birthday party on Sunday. It was so weird. I don't know if it was the activity or if it was the age of the kids, but it was at a pottery place, the kind where you go, you paint pottery, and then they fire it and they kiln, and you pick it up a few days later.
A kiln?
Yeah.
Tied it all together.
Exactly. So, you know, there's this sort of back room, and all the kids are there, and they pick out whatever pieces they want to paint, and then they have to sit down at the table and pick out their paint colors, and then they just start painting. And at that point, like, there were probably, 15 kids there or so, and they were all quiet.
That's eerie.
It was, yeah. As I told Eric, I don't understand what's happening. Everybody's calm and quiet and focused.
Huh.
Even my youngest, Emma, she's usually all over the place, like a scatterbrain, but she was just like laser focused painting her little hedgehog that she picked out.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, it was weird.
I remember those days in elementary school of glazing stuff and putting it in the kiln and then having it get destroyed. Only to ruin your hopes as an elementary school art project.
Yeah, this stuff is a little higher quality than what we made at Huffman.
Yeah, wasn't made by little kids to begin with.
Yeah,
but I got the girls these remote controlless drones.
Oh wow!
And so. They're these little drones. They're probably the size of I'm not sure. It's bigger than a hamburger bun, but they're self-contained as much as they're motion sensing and more actual, they're object sensing. So you kind of calibrate it a little bit and then you just kind of toss it up in the air and then it just floats around and avoids hitting the ceiling or bumping into walls or people or things. And you can kind of steer it by like putting your hands near it to make it back up. So it's like a Roomba.
A Roomba for the air?
Yeah. That's freaky. So I bought us three as well. Since Jesse was going to see them anyway when I wrap them when I get to Alaska. Derek and Jesse and I have been kind of torturing the poor dog here because he thinks that they're the devil. So.
Yeah, I can see how animals wouldn't like that.
But they're kind of fun. So I'm looking forward to it. It's you charge them for an hour and you get about 9 minutes of flight time, which seems pretty good. So
yeah, that's good. That's not long enough to get super annoyed.
Right. They're loud. They're pretty amazing though. They're pretty impressive. But as I told Jesse as he was getting excited last night and he was going to head out to the backyard, I'm like, no, you can't. Because if there's nothing above it, it will keep going up and up and up until it's gone.
Oh, that would be unfortunate.
Yeah, it senses the ceiling and then it drops down. It keeps from going up. So it's pretty interesting. I was amazed at how well they work for considering. I mean, they weren't super cheap, but they weren't as expensive as I would have expected considering how much fun they are. So,
well, that's very cool.
You know, I'm pushing 50 and I've of course played with it for like a half an hour, like I'm an imbecile. So, so Christmas will be fun. It'll be fun times.
Well, I got a question for you. Did you ever watch Jack Ryan on Amazon?
I haven't yet. It's on my list. Did you watch it?
I did.
And is it worth it?
I think so. It's really different.
Different than what you expected or different than the novels?
It's different than what I expected. It actually feels, when it's all said and done, it really feels like a Tom Clancy book.
I think that's a compliment.
Mm-hmm. It is.
I think that's a good thing.
In an era where like every TV show like a prestige TV show wants to be like super heavy and super ominous, it actually felt a lot lighter than I expected it to be, even though it's dealing with pretty heavy subject matter. So I found that to be pretty pleasant.
Yeah, I'm interested to see it. So I just get so much to watch sometimes.
Yeah. I assume you haven't gotten around to Hold the Dark yet.
No. I have all these things on the list, and then I'm, especially now that we're getting ready to leave, you know, I'm trying to get the house in order and get packed. And but, you know, I'll probably download a couple movies to watch on the plane. So
that's where I watched it.
So, yeah, so we'll see. Luckily, we have good seats, so we're in premium class. So we'll be pretty chill.
Nice. Free drinks.
Yeah, that's what I'm told. That was just a bonus. I hadn't anticipated that, but I just didn't want to have to deal with. It was $50 extra, and I'm like, it's totally worth it.
Yeah. Order doubles.
Yeah. Well, and order. We'll order food and we'll get drinks and we'll be first on. And I've got a window seat. Jesse's got the middle seat, and we'll settle in and we'll be good to go. So, yeah. So
three.
I'm ready.
Three of the four flights we had going to San Diego and back offered premium class, and Jennifer booked us in that. I'd never flown that before, but I found out free drinks and I was like, all right, I'm not going to actually drink because I have to drive on both ends. But every time they came by, I asked for a double bourbon. And by the end of it, I showed up at home with, I think almost, I had 500 milliliters of Woodford.
That's awesome. That's pretty cool.
That's two-thirds of like a $40 bottle of bourbon right there.
Yeah. So you do the math. I'm like, you only paid what, $200, $400 for that, right?
Yeah.
So $300.
Yeah. Totally worth it. Oh, by the way, that picture you sent me, that is a really good bottle of bourbon. Have you tasted it?
I did. I cracked it open as soon as I took that picture.
Oh, I bet it just smelled great.
It did. It smelled really good. The funny thing is, I bought that same bottle, not the same bottle, but I bought a bottle of that for one of my coworkers, one of the pharmacists that's in my work group, and because she's a bourbon drinker, and I'd gone in the liquor store and said, I had narrowed it down to two or three, and I said, this is, and that bottle, incidentally, was what I had picked out of all of them. And he said, that is one of the best we've had. And just so you know, they had like a warehouse collapse. And so it's going to be hard to get for a while until they get back into full production, because it takes a while to age it and all that. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, great. So what you're telling me is if I really like it, I'm not going to be able to get it, or it's going to be stupid expensive. And he said, yeah, so you might stock up. So anyway, I bought her a bottle of it, and this was a couple months ago. And she said, where did you get that? And I said, well, just the liquor store. She goes, which one? I can't find it. And I told her, and she said, no, they're out. And I said, well, the nice thing about Oregon is Oregon has everything's online there because it's state liquor. So you can find inventory. You can search the database of who has what. Like Derek wanted this really weird Empress gin that's colored with these weird organic pea pods that make the gin like purple. This electric neon looking purple thing. Because I guess it's super good gin. I'm not a gin drinker, but anyway, I found it. So anyway, I found her a second bottle. And then today they're like, oh, you're not going to be here for your birthday, so happy birthday. And it was it was that same bottle. And she said, nice. I liked it so much, I decided you had to have some too. And then I had to sit at my desk and have that long, long moment with myself. Like, But then as I'm walking from the building to the parking garage, which is, you know, six blocks away, I'm thinking, I could easily get mugged. Like, oh, well, I'll just make sure that, because I'm carrying this bottle of booze. And then I thought, well, that's probably not the smartest thing.
So, you just had it out in your hand?
Well, I had it in a bag, but it was clearly, I mean, it was clearly a bottle of booze. So I'm like, I should probably put this in my messenger bag. Yeah. So, but no, it's definitely good. So I resisted. I had just a wee tipple with nice. Dinner and held back because otherwise I would have been like sniffling and falling asleep.
Yeah, that's good stuff. 1792.
It is good stuff. It's for God's sakes, it's 50 proof.
Yeah.
No, sorry, it's 100 proof.
Yeah, it's 50%.
Hoy. Because it was... yeah, it was fire. It was good, but oh, it was fire. Boy. But yeah, I forget sometimes with the good bourbons, I forget how good they are. So I have to be careful, though, because I could easily just keep going.
Yeah.
Oh, God. And now it's just sitting on the counter taunting. Now I'm thinking about it. But so I'm glad you like it. I'm glad somebody else has had it, because I didn't know anybody else who had had it before, so.
Yeah, I haven't had the small batch, but I've had another bottle of 1792. So I imagine the small batch is even better.
It's kind of caramely. It has, it's really smooth, but it has that. How do I describe it? It's got that kind of that bourbon bite to it. It has that, you know, bourbon has that distinct kind of tang. Mm-hmm. It's got that tang bite, but then it smooths out into like a vanilla. It's really good. I was really, yeah. And I just had it neat. So,
that's the way to
traditionally,
do it.
Well, except traditionally bourbon's supposed to be a mixer, but I just can't. Not the expensive bourbon. I just can't.
Yeah, I agree.
I can't bring myself to it. So. But so yeah, I don't know what liquor we'll have to buy when I'm up there. I'll have to get something because we're going to be there for 3 weeks. So I did rent a car. I don't know if I told you that. So.
Yeah. Good. I was worried I'd still have my car by the time we got up here.
So luckily, because my mom was starting to like, well, and I'm like, no, got it covered.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you wanna catch an episode. They talk movies, they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey, Drew, hey.